With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk. TNT Radio.
Welcome to McBride and Brennan. I'm Major David McBride, military whistleblower, and I have my sidekick and the brains of the operation, Dr. Robert Brennan, somewhere around here.
I am indeed, yes. There is a brain in there somewhere, but I'm just...
You're the very smart man. You're the brains. I don't know what I am.
Yes, but you know, a blue whale has a larger brain than both of us put together. So
is that right?
Yeah, it's what we do with it, I guess. We shall see. Every week, every week's another audition.
Swimming around in the sea.
The occasion is not yet lost when I might not make a fool of myself.
Oh, no. You did a very good job without me last week. A little bit too good. I was hoping you might have some slip-ups, and so I feel like my position is safe, but you did very well with Mr. Cossack.
Well, it's like an Ausploitation movie. You know, you have the Australian larrikin version of Julian Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy. We have the Aussie Cossack in Wallara.
It's pretty Russian funny. Embassy. Yeah. It'd be like a comedy movie, a comedy sort of a satire. A bit like The Life of Brian, you know. You have the Aussie Cossack.
That's right. That's right.
But he was very gracious, because he did make that comparison himself, didn't he? He said that I'm not sure you're going to say.
Fair enough, because I gave him the numbers. He's been there 120 odd days, and he's got the record to beat is 2,488.
It's probably a bit nicer in the Russian consulate in Wallara than the Ecuadorian, even though it was quite nice being next to Harrods. I don't think he only had a small room. I think maybe it's I haven't actually seen the consulate. It's quite near where my ex-wife lives. The Turkish consulate's right there. And there's always a big queue outside at the moment. I don't know whether people are trying to get in or out of Turkey, but.
Yes, it's in a little in a precinct where I think there's either the Croat or Serb one just around the corner, and there's even the Goethe Society nearby.
The Goethe Society is there. It's exactly right. Yeah, very funny.
He can tunnel underneath, get to the Serbs or the Croats or whatever it is, and then they can get a helicopter out. I don't know.
He could. They could do some sort of a deal. You would have thought.
Yeah.
Very funny. We better get to our guest.
We do.
I can see he's sitting alone now. This is someone, I always say this, but I used to read when I was really struggling as a whistleblower and didn't have too many friends, or didn't you bit like the old man in the sea, and it's struggling to find anybody to believe your story. This man used to keep me alive. I used to read his tweets and his stories on his website. One of the few people who day after day, week after week, exposes huge stories about the government, whatever flavor they are. And sometimes you just about have tears in your eyes reading. You'd be so grateful that someone was pointing out the obvious flaws in so many the government propaganda, and that is none other than my old friend, surfer Michael West from Michael West Media. So welcome to the show, Michael.
It's a pleasure to be on the show, David.
Now, it's they do on Desert Island Discs, they ask people, famous, it's a fairly lightweight show, their favourite music. I'm wondering what are your favourite stories over the last couple of years, the ones that you really thought showed? I mean, Stuart Robert, maybe you could even, there's so many scandals, I said, maybe you could talk about your favourite Stuart Robert story since he's announced his day to retire today. Well, the King of Rorts.
I mean, some of the stories aren't necessarily those with the most import or, you know, public weight, but I always liked his $35,000 internet and printing bill wondering how you could possibly use that much internet in a month or whatever it was. I mean, the Stuart Robert story is that obviously he's close to Scobo, but he's one of these politicians that raises money. And it's something the public never get much of a glimpse of, but if you're the bag man for the party or you are a star money raiser, you have a special status within the party. And he, in fact, he was so good at raising money, Stuart Robert, that he raised it for other people in other seats as well for the Liberal Party. So that's his great skill. And I'm sure the party will be sad to see the end of him because of that.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I used to often wonder, how is it he's still in politics? And I think I heard, I probably heard about it on your website or something, but to say he was the king at raising money. And of course, if you can really, because that's the everyday reality of modern politics, is you need money and you need to always be raising money, which is one of the terrible things about it. I know you've campaigned for election financing reform, and it's you could have a bit of a Teflon. If you can raise money, they're always going to love you. The amount of money you need to get ahead in American politics is just makes your it makes your head spin, and it just reminds us that you have to owe a lot of favors to a lot of people to get ahead in American politics, because of I think you've seen that some of the figures are beyond our kind of comprehension, like you need $1 billion or something like that to get elected as a senator or something which is quite incredible. The money, I think it's a big problem, the money raising. Have you done some stories about, you did the donation story, didn't you, about a couple of weeks ago about who are the big donors? And actually, they're not always who you think they're going to be.
No, well, we did. The most interesting one was one that our young reporter, Stephanie Tran, who's since departed, but we're still in good contact, she was fossicking through the data, the AEC data and everything public that she could find. And she worked out that all the corporations were members of the Liberal Party and the Labor Party. Not all of them, but, Woodside, PwC, all the big companies and partnerships and so on. And they're literally, when you go through the data, you can see, like, to be a platinum member, I think it's platinum, diamond, gold, whatever, silver, bronze, whatever, but ones like 100,000, 150,000 or something, I don't know the exact, can't recall the exact figures, but all the companies pay, they're actually members of the parties. And this, you've got this fusing of the large institutions with the state. I mean, it's very sort of Marxist, sort of Leninist, sort of, the fusing of the latter stage capitalism stuff in that creed, that you get the corporations fusing. And now they've all been bailed out, of course, the past 3 years because of COVID. If they haven't been bailed out, they've just taken their JobKeeper and said, thank you very much. A few have been shamed into repaying. But we've got this problem with corporate welfare, really. Qantas is obviously the number one culprit. But the donation stuff and the party memberships, it's astonishing. But it's not the corporation's fault, of course. It's the system. And the bag man for the Liberal Party and for the Labor Party, they go around and they say, it's time to cough up. Where's your 125,000 or whatever it is for the platinum membership? I'm just having a crack at round figures here. And so it's not as if they're running there saying, here, have $100,000 and do us a favour. We've seen the PwC stuff in the past couple of days. I mean, the past few weeks, like, incredible. Selling state secrets while they're being paid by government. And massive donors. And still then, since then, getting new government contracts, multi-million dollar contracts, having lost taxpayers probably billions by passing on these secrets to their multinational clients, their foreign-controlled clients. So, you know, you've got this fusing of the state. There's no penalty for wrongdoing much. They've had to do a PwC. They've had to do an ethics course, you know. It's the sort of thing that when we were in kindergarten, we were taught, now, it's wrong to steal, cheat, lie. You must tell the truth, do the right thing, right? And now PwC, these guys, on $500,000, $1 million a year, all the partners have got to go do an ethics course.
Is that
so
right?
They know what's wrong and what's right.
That's quite incredible, isn't it? Because accountants are no different to lawyers. They do masses of extra training, and it's quite hard to get your chartered accountant qualification. And it's a bit like becoming a barrister. I remember friends from uni doing it, and they found it quite stressful. So the idea that they didn't already know is just quite laughable. It's the same in the military. The people who I allege were sort of covering up war crimes and lying to the public, they had done so many courses on ethics and morality, and they could tell you a story about leadership which would bring a tear to your eye. And they've basically got a university for a general university. You know, they've done probably about five courses, higher learning courses, by the time you become a general. But they were the worst offender, and it almost made your skin crawl to say these people with all this learning and all know all about ethics are the ones who are doing it. I mean, you're right. When you think about the Panama Papers and the effort that so many people have gone into, a lot of our political leaders, I think Malcolm Turnbull was in there, but you're in order to avoid paying tax, avoid paying their fair share of tax. And so many people think that that's not only a good thing, but a clever thing, you know. But that's right. I think the consultancy one, if the average person can get their mind, I saw a story about it today or yesterday, about how much money, government money, is wasted on consultants, they would be absolutely outraged, because it's, as you said, it's taxpayer money. It's not, and they basically, I saw this in defence, they pay a consultant to do things that the public servants couldn't do. They pay a consultant to actually basically make the government more popular, and they get around that they couldn't ask the public service to do that, even though they try to, but it would be a bit... it's sticky. But they can say to the consultancy, oh, we want you to work out a plan of, you know, how we're going to take the defense force into 2025 or something. But it's clear that the PwC or Deloitte or whatever, what they're meant to give back is something which is basically an advertising campaign, which makes people subliminally want to vote for the government again. And that's actually taxpayer money going basically into that election slush fund. But it was interesting what you were saying about the having to pay huge membership fees, because that wouldn't be counted as a political donation. So if the corporations are paying big membership fees, that is a way to get round. I'm sure there's a lot, they donate a lot more. There's all those dinners at $10,000 a head, $10,000 a table. Yeah, they get around the donation laws. I was in politics myself, and they don't take keeping tabs on who's donated what very, very carefully. And obviously nobody gives $100,000, $200,000 for nothing. They want some sort of a return for it. And especially these are businesses, they're profit-making. They have to account to their shareholders. And so huge donations like that are really bribes. They're not any different from a bribe. We need to, with people like you, though, for some of the few people working on that, and along with the tax, one of the things that I learned from you was how so many of these big corporations in Australia pay almost no tax, especially the fossil fuels. Tell us about that.
Well, they would be the biggest avoiders. And right at the moment, in the past 2 years, they've been the biggest profiteers. They've been incredibly profitable. I mean, we're talking billions on all the multinational bottom lines in terms of total income. they will pay some tax this year. ExxonMobil, which is one of the biggest, it's part of the gas cartel, it had racked up something like $70 billion in total income without paying any. I mean, they don't actually make a profit. They just make sure they make a loss here, and they siphon whatever they can, generally through interest payments offshore to related entities. That's how they do it. But they've been now shamed into paying tax, and I believe, and I haven't seen, I've made my application to ASIC to get my copies of the ExxonMobil Limited, Australia Limited financial statements. They still haven't come through. They're probably still acting on their COVID exemption, so it gives them a bit longer to report. But, you know, that's $70 billion odd, no tax. And these guys, the problem here is, and this is what's going to come up in the budget, the PRRT, which is a sort of tax with sort of qualities of a royalty as well, to try to capture some more money. You know, Exxon has been operating with BHP in the States since the 1970s. So it has incredibly mature, highly profitable assets. But the problem with the tax regime is that they go and start a new development, you know, somewhere else, like, you know, in the Timor Sea or Northwest Shelf. And they're incredibly costly to get going, these things. So they just match off their losses in another development against the profits in the previous development, which is mature and making lots of money. So they just keep on going. And that's how they do it. There's a case to say that, you know, that's fair enough because it's huge capital expenditure. But at the same time, you know, to think, David, that you and I every year pay more tax than ExxonMobil is, you know, and this is why tax fairness is a big thing, because people realise that these companies have the scope to avoid tax on a major league scale. And when you think about it, like, if you're in business, labour's a huge cost, capital equipment and so on a huge cost, but when you think about it, like, if a third of every dollar goes in tax and you don't pay any tax, you've got a 30%, a 30 cents in the dollar advantage over domestic operators. You know, I mean, that's your biggest avenue for legally. It's only legal if, of course, if you've been illegal if you've been dragged through court at the cost of the ATO of, you know, $20 million, $30 million in the case of Chevron, where they had a historic win. So when people say it's legal and so on, that's sort of sophistry. It's really, you know, you can just tell. I mean, once a year, these people had to file financial statements. Google, I haven't yet to get to Google's. I'm sure Google Australia won't be paying any tax again. Well, I'm not sure. They could be paying a little bit, but not compared to their massive revenues. Which has come at the expense, of course, of traditional media. They've just taken all the revenue, the advertising revenue. So, you know, that advantage is huge. And there are foreign companies with their foreign entities where they do the related party transactions that are, you know, responsible for this tax avoidance. And so it's a huge advantage when you think about it, to be able to pay no tax. And really just say to the ATO, it's a rarefied high-level game with the tax lawyers and the big four audit firms, you know, come and get us. You know, if you want to spend $30 million, that was the red rag to the ATO bull in the case of Chevron. And they had a crack and they actually won. No technicality got Chevron off. It was a ring-a-ring-a-rosy type of structure that they'd set up to siphon all their profits offshore. And the court found against them. So they are legally tax cheats. But most of them are tax cheats. It's just a case of, will the ATO go after you or will it not? You know.
Yeah, but it's pretty sickening though, isn't it? They're going after Richard Boyle, who everybody knows didn't really cause any great damage. And yet, you know, for 100 years jail or something, he's only about, he's younger than me, but he'll die in jail if they're successful.
They got Al Capone on tax.
They got Al Capone on tax.
Yeah. If we could take a quick break, this is TNT.
Slavoj Moric on TNT Radio.
Canadian pastor Archer Pawlowski, who I interviewed some 2 years ago on my podcast, the Canadian Stasi were trying to enter his church and shut him down, and he rightfully yelled at them, "You Nazi communists." That only happens in Nazi and commie regimes, and him and his forefathers lived under those regimes. You know, some people say, maybe he was too harsh. No, he was not too harsh, and judge has found Pawlowski guilty of violating Alberta Critical Infrastructure Defense Act. So he gave a talk to truckers a year ago, and now he's found guilty, and he's going to appeal and stuff, so he can go to jail just for giving a talk to truckers. Get this, Thomas Jefferson University president might even lose his job, who knows, but the fact that he's being investigated by the whole board and administration for simply for liking a tweet from Alex Berenson, you know, the journalist that criticized COVID-1984. So you can lose your job if you like a thought crime tweet, just for liking it. And likes are like, you know, I use them as bookmarks, basically. That is where we're at. If you like something, you know, better be careful. You could lose your job.
Slavoj Moric on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at SalemNow.com.
You're listening to McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to McBride and Brennan. I'm Major David McBride, military whistleblower, and I'm joined with Michael West from Michael West Media and Dr. Robert Brennan. Should you want to have a few questions of Michael, put him on the spot?
Oh, sure. But let's make sure that we also milk the question of tax evasion, even if we return to it later.
Yeah, I'm happy to go. And also the rorting of the sort of job keeper, job seeker, whatever it was.
Yes, well, we started with a mention of, which is sort of current affairs, of Stuart Roberts' resignation, which is hot off the press. And I just wanted to ask Michael about, you know, there's a number of themes that revolve around Stuart Roberts as a case study. The first is, for example, how short people's memories are and how little the impact of scandals are in terms of, you know, one being elected. I mean, Stuart Roberts elected by a landslide each time because he's in a blue chip Liberal seat. He gets double the votes of the Liberal of the Labor opposition at the time. And he's still the sitting member, even though he's in the opposition. Now, but back in 2014, 2016, something like that, it was him, it was Ian McFarlane, it was Tony Abbott, it was a number of other Liberal and probably even Labor people who were taking trips to China, and they were getting Rolexes and Cartier watches worth $20,000, $30,000 a pop. They were coming back to Australia. They were claiming that they were fake, even though they were given as gifts by Chinese billionaires. And so they were writing them off as fake with their disclosures. And these were very real watches. And so they were back on the back bench for a little while, but then they're recycled back to the front bench. What does it tell us, if you think, about the culture of Australian politics and that the people can just get the hell away with whatever the hell they want to do?
Well, I remember that, the fact that them claiming that the Rolexes were fake was their first PR sort of response. But look, I think this goes to, in the broader sense, something that I sort of, you know, think about all the time. There's a cascading trust in institutions, not just government. And we saw it at the last election, you know, the major parties both lost ground Labor got up with the majority in the end, but in fact, it's you know, the Teals and the Greens and Independents and so on made inroads. So, you know, there is a falling trust in large institutions, be they civil society, things like churches, be they corporations. You know, you look at corporations, I mean, the Business Council of Australia would have a lower Twitter following than David McBride, than at Murdoch Cadell. I mean, you know, things have changed. They've changed radically with the internet, and people say, you know, that it's decimated traditional media income, so they've become more reliant on government as well. But you've just got this falling, you know, look at the mainstream media, the corporate media, the ABC. I mean, there's falling trust by the left and the right in all major institutions, government and private. It's a critical thing, really, when you think about it. I mean, people under 40, this is what's driving it. They have different media appetite and ways that they, you know, connect. But this falling trust in institutions is a serious thing for government. It might be a good thing in the end. It might make us more cynical. So if they try to make us go to war against China or get us off to Ukraine or whatever, you know, like there might be such cynicism that it might not happen. There's obviously good and bad, but it's undeniable, this trend towards falling trust.
Well, there's a good reason for it, though, isn't it? It's not as if it's not so much the trust. They're being found out thanks to people like yourself, and that's why I'm so grateful to independent media. Without people like you, that they wouldn't find out. But yet, if you hear scandal after scandal, from Rolex watches to huge corporations mining all our finite natural resources and not paying any tax, and then giving big donations back to the same people who allow them not to have any pay any tax. I mean, the Catholic Church, no wonder people, or any church for that matter, we've seen with Hollingworth recently. I mean, whatever flavor church you'd be struggle, or Hillsong even, you'd be you'd be struggling. It's not because it's bad, you know, the idea of faith is not a bad thing, but people like yourself are seeing, there are a lot of phony people out there, put it that way. A lot of Stuart Roberts. Now, Stuart Roberts strikes me, he's obviously quite a thick-skinned person, but I don't believe, you know, he's just different to anyone. I didn't think people were like that, but he's quite capable of saying things he doesn't believe in. They say that the best actors and the best sort of showman, P.T. Barnum, you're better at selling something you don't actually believe in, apparently. So that's an interesting psychological point. You can put on the dog a little bit better. Dance the razzmatazz if you're not restricted by any kind of any link to truth or true belief. And but saying that, I'd like to think that we're going to come into a new stage, because it's all about truth, you know. It's all about actually people not being afraid of the truth, you know, and rather than all this razzmatazz about companies doing this and the greenwashing and, oh, such and such an oil company, we're planting a few trees here and there, and look, we're doing this, you know, we're cleaning the oceans, and all this kind of marketing campaign, you know, young people can see through it and say, no, actually, you're not paying tax, you're taking a finite resource, you put on a few expensive ads like Qantas. Yeah, Qantas, you know, it sums up Australia, probably one of, in many ways, Australia's worst company, yet they have the best ads on TV that make you want to cry. But you know, the most venal and high, you know, gouging the government money for what they should be doing themselves. Alan Joyce on absolutely obscene amounts of money, not for making a profit, but for making a loss. And why wouldn't you, you know, give someone obscene amounts of money and then taking money off the government? And then if you fly on a Qantas plane lately, you have a terrible time. So it's, and yet it's all, they've got beautiful ads. That's Australia today, you know, putting, and hopefully people are beginning to see through it, to say, as you said, it was good. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next election, course, Albanese was in opposition before, but now he's in government. And he, as you said, they actually, their primary vote went backwards. A lot of people who used to be rusted on Labor supporters are very disillusioned with him because of the stage three tax cuts, because of the failure to move on Assange, because of AUKUS, because of the $368 billion on nuclear sub. All these things, which were sort of ScoMoisms, have been adopted. And so will there be some sort of a teal equivalent where people are looking for sort of integrity rather than just the same old razzmatazz left and right? Hopefully people are seeing through it, thanks to you.
Well, I think that's right. That hence the Teals. Mm. And, you know, the Teals get criticised a bit from the left for being, you know, save our planet and save our franking credits. But I've had this sort of internally with the guys that I work with, sort of this debate about the Teals, you know, because one guy that I had who was editor, he used to really put the boot into them heavily. And I sort of went, well, actually, when you think about it, they're 10 or 11 or whatever they are of the most blue chip seats or electorates or regions in Australia. And what they're doing by being right wing pro-climate, et cetera, is simply representing their electorates. And I don't have a problem with that. If you represent a wealthy electorate, you're not going to want to be taxing rich people. I mean, you know, it's just natural. And that is democracy. I find that is democracy. Now, a lot of traditional political observers say, oh, this is terrible, the two-party system's under pressure, et cetera. Well, good. You know, it has failed us. And as you say, just to cover off on the truth thing, there's no penalty for telling lies. There's no penalty really for political corruption with all the pork barreling and so on. So it's just like the kids in the playground. You know, if there's no penalty for mucking up and doing stuff wrong, then they're going to muck up and do stuff wrong. This is the problem. There's just no penalty. And the corporate, you know, directors can get away with blue murder. They always cry about the terrible onerous responsibilities, but nobody ever gets sued. You know, or very, very rarely. I mean, James Hardie was a one-off, and they're still licking their wounds about that years later. But, you know, this is the problem. Where there's no penalty, bad behaviour, then there's going to be bad behaviour.
I don't know where they got it from.
Double standard. And the double standard, unfortunately, everyone's onto it now. Everyone's onto it. They're going, hang on, there's one rule for these guys, multinationals or politicians, and there's another rule for these guys. Like, I've just been hit by the tax office in a personal, well, a business thing because, you know, cost of living crisis, the whole thing, everything for no particular infringement, but just a late payment or them smashed with penalties and so on. But if you're a large corporation, you don't get penalties. You know, I did a Business Council of Australia 10 years of their accounts and found out that they filed them late, which is against they're in breach of the corporation's law. But, and I asked ASIC, have you fined these guys? I mean, what are you doing, you know? Nothing. This is the problem. The double standard is now, and hence the cynicism. It's not a level playing field.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the stupid thing is it's not impossible. We're heading towards sort of a revolution. We have a nice country here, but if people really at the top have no ethics at all and no intention of playing fair and looking after their people, it is going to go bad. You know, when people think that if you're a billionaire, your next step is to become a multi-billionaire rather than actually giving something back into the community. And this is why I worry about us getting increasingly close to the US. We pick up on bad things from there. Their ethos seems to be get as rich as you possibly can, and if you can screw everybody else, that's great. Now, that's obviously a bad way to live, and we need to pay tax. We need to be grateful for the country that we live in, and it shouldn't be having more than $1 billion shouldn't be a badge of honour. It should almost be a badge of shame. You only need so many houses to live in. I noticed during COVID when people, I used to sort of sicken me during COVID, I would walk around with my dog. My mother lived in Neutral Bay, which is sort of a nice suburb, and sort of middle suburb in Sydney. And I used to go down to Balmoral Beach, which is a very nice little place. And I couldn't believe that sort of huge houses that were going up, houses which were more like apartment blocks or skyscrapers. And people were raking in a lot of money, getting richer and richer. And there was no, while a lot of people were doing it very tough and not able to pay the bills, small people, the bigger people were getting obscenely rich. And that was the gaps between the rich and poor in this country were getting, I think, have been getting out of control. And it's a shame. There's a greed, there's an element of greed where, and it particularly, it's okay if it comes from absolutely lily-white business practices, but when it comes from cheating on tax, when it comes from getting special preferential treatment from the government, that's not acceptable, particularly when you've got cases like myself and I'm being charged with leaking information, which I did do because I believe it was justified, and it was a way to get change for what I saw was very bad political conduct in the Defence Force. Now, as you said, we started off talking about that partner in PwC who was leaking information for his own career, and so his clients could avoid tax, avoid paying their regular tax, and money involved. Now, he probably won't even face any kind of charges. Now, that is the sort of double standard which is beyond the pale, where you're going to put one person in jail for life who was motivated by trying to do the right thing for his country, and someone else, as you said, is not even going to get any penalised. A millionaire is not even going to get, it makes you wonder. You talk about classes for ethics, but it does make you wonder how these people got to have absolutely no ethic and just think it's all a game, whether it's taking money off the government or whether it's taking money off idiot pensioners who don't know any better. But the idea that ripping people off is somehow big and clever, that sort of Jordan Belfort attitude to life, which just seems to have crept into Australia, and I don't think it belongs here. It does worry me. And but even if we just made people tell the truth, I think we'd go a long way to clearing that up. Truth in political advertising, truth in corporate, getting ASIC to do their job. I mean, that was one of the things that really shocked me when I started becoming a whistleblower, is how the safeguards, there's a sort of military equivalent of ASIC, doesn't do anything. There's ASIC, doesn't do anything. When you hear Jeff Morris, the Commonwealth Bank whistleblower, talk about ASIC, as you say, don't do anything. And having a safeguard that does nothing is worse than not having the safeguard at all. And the AAT, you know, all of these things, the Labor Party have rightly done a good job getting rid of that. But I mean, the problem is pretty bad in this country.
I'm still left when it comes to the mention of the Teals and the games we play with ourselves and the moral sentiments and ideological sentiments we think we have, because there's that image in my mind of the of one of the Teal candidates pulling up in their 8-cylinder Cayenne S Porsche, dropping off Teal core fluids. It was very, very funny. I'm thinking, surely there's a lower carbon output vehicle. But on that note, we're going to have another break. This is TNT.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
This COVID virus sure is intelligent. Not only can it tell whether you're standing or sitting at a restaurant, it can also apparently tell whether you're working or not. Two recent data sets should put the final nails in the coffin of any argument that these mRNA injections are safe and effective. The Society of Actuaries just released data showing that while excess mortality was up 32% in the general population, excess mortality was up 40% among Fortune 500 workers, a group that typically sees one-third the excess mortality of the general population. For the first time ever, that has inverted. The Fortune 500 employees are now experiencing one-third greater excess mortality. Meanwhile, Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that those eligible to work but not working saw a 4% increase in disability claims during the COVID scamdemic, but those actually working saw a 32% increase rate of disability claims. What could possibly put working people at greater risk than non-working people? Could it be mandates? From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Running a business in the digital age isn't easy. Luckily, signing up for Digital Boost is. It's your very own digital toolbox, packed with everything to teach you how to save time, increase productivity, and improve your company's presence online. Sign up for free at digitalboost.co.nz and make the internet work for you. That's me typing it in on my computer, like you should be.
This is McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk.
TNT.
TNT Radio.
Welcome back to McBride and Brennan. I'm Major David McBride, military whistleblower, and I have Dr. Robert Brennan, medical legend, and we have a real king in the house, coronation, the king of uncovering government rorts, Michael West. And now I've got to give you a plug before I forget. You have, is it a website, Michael West Media? And people can join up and they can see the scoops straight up. How do people watch your scoops, Michael?
Well, we have a YouTube channel. We've been trying to grow that a bit. We're up to about 70,000 subscribers there. So that's called the West Report, and we have a website, and we just put the content over, you know, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, even Instagram. I don't do that, but a bit of TikTok. And basically, it's community driven. It's like backing the local football or netball team, or buying the jerseys, or some sort of sponsorship like that, where you don't pay so that you can read it. It's not paywalled. You pay so that everyone can read it. And what we do is, basically, I get up at 4 o'clock every morning and look what's in the papers and work out who's dropped whatever dropped to who, and what the government and the corporate media is cooking up. And look at the agendas, and when there's a story where we can add value, we run an AAP feed just for like the basic news, so there's no comment, and then we try to do one good quality story or two a day. Basically, you know, there's a lot of rorts going on out there in the mainstream media, unfortunately, because it's party political, and it's controlled by its advertisers, because the big institutions have got bigger and fewer, and by government. It's a sort of, there's a scoop for access sort of regime now, where the government, ScoMo perfected the art. In the old days, you'd drop stories to either News or Fairfax, and the injured party that didn't get the scoop would wake up the next morning and they'd, you know, look at the story, you know, on its merits and decide whether to back it or not. So there's more competition. These days, there's a drop to, you know, a handful of political correspondents in Canberra. It goes online at about, midnight to 3 a.m. And the morning TV and radio producers come in and they take their lead from what's on the front pages. And that's the way it works. So the government is still controlling the information and the 24-hour news cycle, because by the time people like myself or Bernard Keane or whoever in independent media get a chance to have a crack at it, it's a few hours later, and hopefully with a bit more data and you know, the ability to talk to people rather than getting the press release a day early. And that's why the social media and independent media, you know, that's why independent media has done well on social media, because people want an alternative voice rather than the press release a day early. So it's quite, you know, at some point the system will have to break, you would have thought, because the internet's like, you know, in the comic books, it's like the blob. If you punch it in one part, it sort of bulges out in the other part. And so you can never really beat it, you know. And so eventually, you know, people under 40, they're not, you know, they're not tuning in. And so that control will go, and that's why there's a lot of cynicism in the younger demographics. That's why there's a fracturing of the two-party system, and which will be very interesting to see how that goes, because in defence, you know, we've talked a lot, David, about AUKUS, and in resources, fossil fuels, energy, and so on, there's a fracturing, because the corporate media is pretty much owned by vested interests. And, you know, occasionally somebody like Keating will come out and have a huge swipe at AUKUS, and, you know, and there'll be an alternative voice, and the mainstream will pick it up and will run it because it's Keating. But if I point it out, they just totally ignore it, you know. But it has to change, because everybody is a publisher these days. Everyone. We've all got our voice.
Yeah, which is a good thing. And when yours is that's, you got more subscribers than I thought. That's a sizable bunch of 70,000 or something. That's terrific. But it is.
Paying. They just get an email.
Oh, I know. But I mean, it's.
Yeah, look, we've got a few, enough to employ two or three journalists and give some work to freelancers, because the community has been, they've tipped in. And it's a wonderful.
You can compare the stories you break, as you said, compared to what you're going to see in the major dailies. You're never going to see anything particularly. This is one of the problems you have as a whistleblower, and there's a misunderstanding. You and I appeared at a conference last week, and there was AJ Brown, who's a very, very smart lawyer who helped the government write the Public Interest Disclosure Act, and I wouldn't have understood it before I became a whistleblower myself either. But you see that there's an assumption amongst non-whistleblowers, which is of course 99% of the population, that if you go to the media with a story, it'll get run. But of course that's not the case at all. The Australian newspaper will not run an anti-government story. Different to the, you know, in the 70s that the Washington Post and the New York Times helped bring down the US government, but that won't happen today. The Herald might, you know, they'll run a sort of bad soldier story, but they won't run a bad general story. And that's the reality. Independent media is the only one where as you said, the problem with, you can make a fantastic piece and it can be ignored by 95% of the population. And as you said, another thing, there's never going to be a bad story about Gerry Harvey, because he's the biggest, or Harvey Norman are the biggest, one of the biggest advertisers. They just about own the newspapers. And so if you own the newspapers, you're going to control the narrative, and the big arms companies are going to be like that as well. So it's as you described, it's a bit of a revolution, setting us up for the revolution. There are people that read the newspapers and believe what they hear, and there's people that don't, and watch you and Friendly Geordies and Russell Brand and Joe Rogan and all these sort of big influencers who have a completely different opinion, a polarized opinion. What I would like to do is be a peacemaker, because I do worry about having these two very different polarized opinions, and people are only victims of what they read and what they hear. You can't blame people. If you read The Australian every day, it's beautifully set out. You can't blame it. You can't blame people who read The Australian for believing it. It's subtle. And So we have to kind of join the two groups together, you know, the people who read mainstream media, people who watch the ABC, and actually with people who don't. And rather than ending up in a huge sort of world war in Australia, civil war, we can actually and truth could be the glue that gets us together to sort of say, well, you've got to stop. Of course, it's hard. And that was one of the realizations I came, and it goes in the name, corporate media. If your job is to make money, to run a newspaper that makes money, obviously that's a huge constraint to the truth. The two things don't matter. That was one of the problems in the war in Afghanistan. If your aim was actually to get good news stories to help you win the election at the next election, that was counter to actually winning the war. And that clash of politics and actually running a war correctly was never able to be re-resolved, because people just wanted short-term Instagram-type stories that the people at home would like, opening of schools and such, which got a bit of a thumbs up, the red heart, but it didn't matter that that had no bearing on what was actually going on. The place was chaos. And had we just been more focused, it does matter. The truth will not only improve things, but lies will bring us all down. I notice in Robert F. Kennedy's election pitch, he was saying it was a terrible thing, the Gary Powers incident, before either of us we were born, but the US were claiming that they didn't spy over Russia, and then one of their spy planes crashed in Russia, and he said the American people were quite surprised that they'd been lied to by their own government, and he wants to put an end to the security services, think it's okay to lie to their own government. And while that is obviously very laudable, it's a terrible situation where we take it for granted now that our own governments lie to us, and they say for our own good or whatever, but it can't be for our own good, and that needs to become an offence again. A bit out of your area, but what do you think about the coronation? Have you been looking at that? That's happening today. We really can't leave the program without having a bit of a mention.
Well, I've got my mum sitting on the couch here with me, and she's very keen to watch the coronation. I'd rather be watching the footy myself. But, I haven't put the photograph on Twitter, but in fact, mum and dad were teachers at Geelong Grammar in the 60s, and there's a photograph of me with Prince Charles there. And when I said this to somebody at boarding school, they called me the Royal You-Know-What, because I said that the Prince Charles used to give me piggybacks when I was like a 4-year-old. And so the Royal You-Know-What. And so I think it's interesting. We ran a piece this morning just looking at the numbers, the polls, really, and it's surprisingly sticky. Everyone knows it's a bit old-fashioned and, it's going to go at some point. But there's this sort of resignation. It's a bit quaint, the pomp and pageantry. Well, people just accept it. You have your staunch, there's still a few older staunch monarchists or royalists, and then most people don't really care. And then you've got your sort of activist Republicans. So it's just not a big deal. I think there's a view that it's served us well over the years, and that we're not really run by Britain anyway, although, AUKUS and so on might be challenging that notion. But look, I'll have a look at it. I won't pay much attention. It's all a bit silly from my perspective. It's old-fashioned and so on. But, it's a spectacle, isn't it? I mean, do you place more weight on it than that, or...?
So you don't have any. So you don't have any Charles and Di Franklin Mint dinner plates at home that you're going to celebrate with?
I haven't got the tea towels or crockery. No, none of that. There's nothing wrong with it, mind you. If people want to do that, I'm not particularly. I mean, I just think it will happen. Obviously, Albo's thing is, let's just get the voice. I mean, look, he's over there. It's like the US. They go over there and they get charmed by the powers that be, and they sort of, you know, almost become true believers, you know. I mean, he's got to get the voice referendum first, and I imagine if he gets another term of government, he might have a referendum again on a republic. But that's certainly down the track. People are just thinking, let's just leave it. It's not high priority at the moment.
I remember when I went to Petergov, the beautiful palace just outside of St. Petersburg. You know, you get your photograph with these beautiful people wearing period costume, but the monarchy is long gone there since 1917, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, what is there's our music, but what is good news is I before the show started, I heard Albo's full comment on Julian Assange, and he sounded genuinely concerned. So we'll see. Hopefully there is some movement there.
I agree. Actually, you know, I think there is the Dutton, you know, the bipartisan, the bi-political thing, it gives it a little bit of force as well. There seems to be movement. It can't just be in a holding pattern forever. And I hopefully, David, with your situation too, they're not going to put, I would have thought, I'm editorializing heavily, but they're not going to put you in jail. But it's torture anyway, not moving to a resolution.
This is TNT.
Thank you so much.